This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, hello, my amazing, beautiful, curious friends. So great to see you. My name is Chadley, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek into the real world of scientists, engineers, astronauts, and other experts as they solve problems using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. Please welcome to the show my partner in exploration, the dean of all things STEM and STEAM, Jennifer Swanson!
Hello, Jen! You seem really excited for today's show.
I am excited for today's show. I love space and imagining space for like my entire life. And that's a long time because I'm almost 100 years old. So it's like this is something, today's like a dream come true for me.
Yes, we have an out of this world interviewer today.
Yeah. But before we get to that, we have to get back down to earth, and we need to give a shout out to a couple of our new team members.
We do. We have two people we would like to welcome to the Solve It for Kids team. So say hello to Vanessa and Abdul.
Hey!
Hi!
Now, Vanessa and Abdul, thank you so much. Now, I think I got it down now. Vanessa and Abdul, they talk to their folks about going to our website, solveitforkids.com. Yep. And there, the folks got to know all the information. There was a button there to go to our Patreon page, and that explains the whole Solve It for Kids team member thing stuff, right?
Yes, you got it. That's right. Exactly what you do. Oh. And don't forget, when you go to the Solve It for Kids website, you see lots of other cool things, and you'll get to learn all about the guests that we have, and you can enter to win a free book.
How do we enter to win a free book?
Well, you can do one of two things. You can participate in the challenge and send us your challenges, which we would love to have you do. Or you can just go to the blog post that's for every episode and leave a comment below. Like, hey, I listened. I thought this was cool. Or you can just say hi to one of the scientists in the blog post.
That's awesome. Talk about an easy contact. Now, I think I got this down too. Now, every week, before we introduce our guests, we kind of have to figure out what it is we're going to talk about. And you and your creative mind have created this, like, wheel thingy with all these different problems on it. And we spin the wheel, and whatever the wheel lands on, that's the problem we talk to our guests about today.
Yes, and I think by now, all of our listeners can say this with me. Spin the wheel, Jed!
How do you live in space?
How do you live in space? Like I said before, this is something I've been thinking about forever. Like, how do you eat in space? How do you take a shower in space? How do you go to the... Well, I don't know if I want to go into that. But anyway, so who are we going to talk to today?
We are going to talk to the amazing Katie Coleman, who is an astronaut and who actually lived in space on the International Space Station. And she's going to share her experiences all with us. And she has a special challenge for you.
Awesome. Welcome, Katie.
I love just the introductions where I'm like, oh, I want to spend time with these people and find out what they are thinking about. I can't wait to hear the questions.
Well, we are excited to have you, as I said. For those of you that don't know but might have read my Astronaut Aquanaut book, Katie is one of the experts that was featured in my book. And if you've had me to your school to talk about it, you get to see the picture that I show of Katie floating through the air as she's at the International Space Station. So we're going to talk to her about today because the problem that Katie is going to help us solve or tell us how she solved is, how do you live in space? So, Katie, can you tell us maybe a little bit about how many times you've been in space and how long you've lived in space? Start with that.
So, I'm an astronaut, and I went twice to space on the space shuttle First time was for 16 days, the longest mission we'd ever had at the time. And it was literally like practice for the space station because it was a science mission. We had in the back of the space shuttle, we had a laboratory and we had about 30 different science experiments. And by being a scientist, it helped me. I was able to understand, you know, what are these experiments about? What are their goals? And how can we help them solve their problems? So that was, and our problem that we were addressing on that mission was we are building a space station. And we have to like figure out like when everybody's doing experiments and everybody wants to call down to the ground and talk to the different scientists down there, you know, how are we going to organize that? Can everybody talk at once? And can we take pictures? Can we send all those questions about we're going to have a space station and we'd better be ready. So that was my first mission. My second one was to launch the Chandra X-ray Observatory, which is like the sister of telescopes like the Hubble Space Telescope and the Amaray Observatory. And basically, I think somebody said, okay, we've got a whole spectrum of wavelengths that tell stories. And we have telescopes that look at this, telescopes that look at this. Well, what about a telescope that looks at X-rays? Because it turns out black holes and X-rays, they're like this. I mean, so when things are being sucked into a black hole, X-rays are being spewed out. And so by saying, let's have a telescope that can measure X-rays, and they had a pretty cool problem-solving challenge for that. Maybe we could go back to it.
Oh, yeah. That's fabulous.
We had that. And then I spent 6 months on the International Space Station, almost just a few days shy of that. And I loved living up there, but we did have to solve some interesting problems. Most of them were pretty fun.
Katie, you just talked about the fact that the scientists had to figure out a way to use a telescope to take pictures of X-rays. How did they solve that problem?
The problem they had to solve was that, you know, different wavelengths of light are literally different sizes, right? Yes. And you know, wavelength and things like light, like the light that our eyes can see, you could think of them as like the size of a beach ball. And so you can have a telescope with big mirrors. And if a light ray comes in, there it is. It's seen by the mirror and it gets bounced off and it's really easy. But X-rays are like the size of peas. I mean, they're so tiny. And so how do we get them to the mirror? You know, cause there's not going to be that many of them that can hit the mirror. And what they did is they thought, well, how would we get, you know, something small onto a small space, you know, where it can only be right here. How do we get something in there? Well, if we were pouring liquid, we'd use a funnel, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
They built their telescope in the shape of a funnel and actually nested funnels, like funnel, 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 funnel. And they all went like this and they land on the mirror. And so even though it's these little tiny little X-rays, they get captured by the funnel and they get on the mirror right there. I thought that was pretty cool problem solving.
That's amazing. So scientists and engineers are amazing people to come up with that idea. So that's what we're talking about on the show here is you take something that you know, i.e. water, like exactly what you said, how do you get water to some place? And then you just kind of extrapolate or kind of look at it in a different way and you can do the same thing. I think that's so cool. That's amazing.
Really, really cool.
That's amazing.
And actually, if you look at pictures of the Chandra telescope, which I took, by the way, in space. Like, if you see a picture of the Chandra, I took that picture.
Fabulous.
And actually, my problem there was, you know, when we take a picture on the ground here, you know, you stand 2 feet, you hold the camera steady, you try not to do this, right? Because you want the camera to be really steady. Well, if you're floating everywhere, how do you take a good picture? And especially in the shuttle where I'm like not tall enough to like, I'm not going to stay on the ground and I'm not tall enough to actually even hit the ceiling and be steady. So what I figured out was I had to hold on to the back of a seat and someone else also held on to me inside, not just my spacesuit, because there I'm moving in my spacesuit, but they had to like grab my leg so that I could take those pictures. But when you see those pictures of Chandra, the Chandra telescope is long and skinny. It has a pointy end and a bigger end. And the bigger end is actually where everything goes in.
Oh my gosh. So you don't even think about that when you want to take a picture. You just stand still, but think about everything you had to do to be still. And then I assume you hold your hands really still, but But still, you're moving.
But then if you're moving.
Right. You're moving.
Literally, you need some help sometimes. And sometimes the best camera stand is one of your friends up on orbit to hold on to.
So how do you brush your teeth in space? Because clearly here we brush, we spit into the sink, everything goes down into the sink and gets washed away. How do you do that in space?
Well, you have some options, but you have brought up basically the only thing that when I got back to Earth, I was sort of glad to come back to Earth and do it what I thought of as a regular way. And that is, I mean, you want to spit, and let's think about this. I mean, whatever came out of your mouth is going to go as far as it can go until it hits something, which really just might be your friend's brand new shirt. We only have right? It's bad. And so, you know, spitting is not practical. Okay.
Okay.
It's not. And so what you can do is you can either spit into a paper towel and then throw that away.
Okay.
And I'll say that we think about every single, like, paper towels. I would never dream of using a whole wet wipe or a whole paper towel. I mean, well, we cut them in pieces. I mean, because you never know when the supply ship's going to be there. So that's the other part of our sort of calculation when we figure out a new way to do things is what's the best way to conserve our resources. But, you know, spitting into a paper towel, that's okay. That works. It's kind of yucky.
Yeah.
but then you can also, what I did is I would just swallow it. I mean, you know, you put that toothpaste on your toothbrush. I mean, it's the same food you already had in your mouth. I mean, I know the math all adds up there. It's still kind of gross, right? So I was really glad to come home and not do that anymore.
You all miss Jed's gross. he made this face like, ew. But, you know, I suppose when you're in space, you have to get used to doing different things. And, you know, I mean, it's like you said, you have to make do with what you have up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can call up and say, hey, we're out of toilet paper. Can you just send some more?
Exactly.
I suppose some of those lessons you learned about conserving toilet paper and paper towels would really come in handy these days.
Well, you know, it's really true that, you know, this is the time during COVID-19 where, you know, it's a little uncertain. I mean, things will seem kind of normal, but the infection rate could increase. And you know, you don't really, I mean, I don't, you know, I'm thankful for all the people that are working. And they're working, mm-hmm. delivering and being in warehouses and keeping the rest of us supplied. But we try to, you know, make sure that we're not going to have to make them work any harder than is really necessary by conserving.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
It's true.
So what are some of the other problems that, or, you know, maybe problems, but that you had to solve when you were in space just living there? I mean, how did you sleep okay? Because, you know, we all like to climb into our beds and lay down and you snuggle, but you guys float while you sleep, right?
So from a problem-solving perspective, I mean, first of all, people are all going to solve problems in different ways, right?
Yeah.
And we all kind of sleep in different ways. I mean, I don't know. I only know about sort of our family, right? But I imagine right. everybody sleeps different. I like to sleep all curled up. And what we have for sleeping is we have a sleeping bag. It's not all padded and thick because it's not really like cold up there, but it is, it's like, it's almost like the thickness of a bedspread, or it's like a little eyeglass case that we kind of like slither into, but it has armholes so we can have our arms out so that I can still reach something, or I can answer the intercom if something is happening on the space station, or, you know, things like that, or at least I can hear. And so that your sleeping bag can be tethered to the wall just with like little bungee cords or little knots. We have hooks on the wall, and then you go slide in, you go to sleep. But problem solve, what are some of the things that you miss? Some people just miss feeling like they have that nice pillow under their head. So a way to solve that is they sent us with some pillows that have straps on them. And you can strap your pillow to your head.
Oh, my gosh.
Side of your head, like with a headband. And now you kind of feel like you have a pillow. So that was one solution for some people. I do like to sleep, like, curled up in a ball. And I loved actually being in space. And so I didn't necessarily hook my sleeping bag on the wall all the time. Sometimes I just would, like, oh, I just kind of feel like floating around. We have, like, a cabin. It's a size, I'd say, of an old-fashioned phone booth, right? And so what I would do is tuck up my knees, right?
Yeah.
And then I would zip up that sleeping bag. So now I'm in a little ball held by the zipper, right?
Right.
So I'm not relying on gravity to let me curl up and stay there. And then I would go to sleep. And I would wake up in the morning. In this cabin, I have like a little stand that my computer is on. And sometimes I wake up in the morning and I'd be like looking at the bottom, like, oh, I guess I must be underneath the computer desk.
You know? Oh my gosh. You're just like floating around. Oh my God. What did that feel like? I mean, I guess you're floating around the whole time. So maybe it doesn't feel different, but I just can you imagine that, Jed?
I think that would be like the weirdest thing and the most amazing thing in the world, or out of this world, or I'm not sure how you say it, but and I'm not sure, Katie, I'm not even sure how you'd have a drink in space.
If you want to drink something, first of all, you have to get it into a glass. That's kind of challenging, because if you pour out of a pitcher, gravity's going to help that go in, right?
Right. Down.
And so for us, for NASA, one of the ways that they designed things was they thought, well, maybe our astronauts need a different kind of faucet to get water from, where actually pushes water out. And so if you think about this idea of floating around and in flying around, in order for anything to go somewhere, you have to either sort of push it, Or you have to use a force to make it go where you want to go. Yeah. And if I took one of my drink bags, I actually have one right here, and it has this would be how it would start. And so it's just a bag, kind of like your juice bags where you poke a straw into them, right?
Right.
But we take this little top, which is where you poke the straw, and we stick it up to our faucet, which is really a needle that water is coming out of. So water is forced into our bag. We do some shake. If this happens to be strawberry drink, or it might be coffee, or it might be milk, something like that. And then I stick a straw in there. Now, when I squeeze on this bag, water or juice or whatever is going to come out here. And because gravity is happening, it's not going to drift down. It's going to make a bubble. And it can,
right.
Because of surface tension. So surface tension is this force. It's very small. And so it's the force that when you look at your car, if your car is clean, the water is all beaded up after it rains. And if it's dirty, it's kind of spread out like this. And that has to do with how much those water molecules like each other.
Yes.
So when it becomes the biggest game in town, I mean, gravity, we don't have it, right? Or very little. So we don't have that, but we do have surface tension. So we use it. And so we that's how I solve this problem, really, is when I want to wash my hair, and let's think about what we want to do with liquids when we want to make them go someplace.
Right.
I would take a bag of actually soap, okay, dry soap. I put warm water in it.
Okay.
And then I would take it and I would squeeze it. And instead of having it be like this and then try to dunk my head in it, that might be, I mean, I did try that. Okay. It didn't actually work very well. But then one bet way was actually just to have it be on my head, and I can actually make a big ball of water on my head. And if I shake it like a dog, it's going to go everywhere, like
right.
Everywhere. But if I just kind of like then take it and mush it in, I can wash my hair in just a couple minutes. I can take a towel, sop it out. So we're thinking, you know, how do we make these liquids do what we need them to do? I wanted to show people how I washed my hair. And so I set the camera up. I was in the bathroom, right, which has kind of a curtain like this. And I put the camera like right in front. I brought it in there with me and I had it inside. And it had, and I started to do this. And as soon as I was doing this, I mean, sometimes water escapes. You usually just kind of wipe down the walls a little bit. But there it was going right towards the camera. I'm like, oh, this is not, and this was not live. It was just a little tape.
Right.
And then I figured out I should have that camera just in the corner with the curtain closed and all those things. And then our chief of the office asked to have a little conference with us. And she said, could I talk about hygiene with you, all of you? And we thought, well, how would somebody on the ground know what we smell like? And actually, we're very clean up there. It's really easy to use that bag of water, make like a sponge bath. I mean, I felt very clean really all the time. We exercise a lot and you just wipe off and you're dry, you're clean. But it turns out that when I sent that film down to the ground and they saw that blob of water coming towards the camera, it worried them because, you know, here's a problem. We live in a space station. It has a lot of different electrical circuits, and we don't really want You know, it's like having your whole electrical closet at a big, you know, company having a shower in it. I mean, you're going to have short circuits. I mean, we have to be careful. So we're always thinking about that, about how to make sure that water doesn't, you know, get free in the cabin.
Katie, it's like really obvious that before you go into space, you and the engineers and the scientists sit down and you try to anticipate everything you're going to need and every situation you're going to have to deal with. And then you get up into space and you have all this planning, but still stuff goes wrong and you have problems. And I'm just wondering, how do you get yourself to like not go, when all that stuff goes wrong?
I think there's this interesting balance between, first of all, when you're really going, I mean, which it happens, it totally happens, especially when you're trying to like put stuff away or take it out. And it's like unpacking a suitcase that has everything in it and you open it up and everything's floating away. I mean, it's pain, right? And you can't afford to lose things. I mean, if things float away, let's say it's like the one, you know, cable from your computer and there's only one of them, right? I mean, you know, you're just, you know, that's going to be bad if that experiment doesn't have that cable. So we have to be really careful not to lose things. So that is an kind of moment, is where are things? In fact, I found someone's pocket knife closed up, floating in front of my eyes one day. I mean, I was just working, and then suddenly, you know, there it was. And that pocket knife had been lost about a year and a half earlier.
Oh my gosh. It just flipped.
Well, or maybe it's behind one of the racks or tucked under something, and it just took someone kicking that thing. And, you know, but I did want to talk about problem solving in general, up there or anywhere. And I think it's an interesting balance. You know, I think, okay, so how am I going to solve this? And there's a balance between, I mean, I think the first thing to think about is, you know, what do I know already?
Yes.
The second thing I think about is, you know, how can I find out if things that I know I need to know, but I don't know, how can I find those out? And that is to ask people, which is why I was so happy to come on the show today. And yet there's this balance between thinking that there's things you're supposed to know and things other people know, and they're going to have the answers. But there's another part, and it's a really important part. And that is that you have answers inside you. You have ideas about how to solve the problem that nobody else, not anybody on the internet, not any of your friends, you have ideas that they don't have. And you can't think that there's just one way to solve a problem, because there's lots. And you might have a really important idea for this problem, but actually it might even apply like, okay, it's another way to solve that. But you know what it's really good for is this other problem. And we're finding that right now with COVID-19.
Right.
So interesting. And it's about what's in yourself.
Right. And we've talked about this several times on the show, but so science and engineering is actually, in my opinion, better if you have more diverse people from different backgrounds, all looking at a problem from a different angle and then coming together to figure it out. Because it's just like you said, people, you know, someone on, you know, in another part of the world might see something completely differently from how you're looking at it. Or someone who had maybe an engineer could help solve a medical problem. You know, like it's all people working together and making suggestions and not being afraid to say something. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, that's wrong. No, there's like, I always tell my students, there's no stupid questions. There's no stupid suggestions. Just throw out what you have and we'll see if it works. Right.
I like it. Can I tell you about it? Well, I think it's interesting the way different people solve problems, and it also has to do with what kind of information and clues are you good at collecting?
Ooh,
I mean,
I like
some
that.
People are good at collecting visual clues, looking at how these things might go together. Some people, it's more about reading and taking in all that information. And some people, it's about listening and going, oh, that doesn't sound right. My crewmate, Paolo Nespoli from Italy, was a very visual person. He also thought a lot about how people actually use things. And we had a problem that wasn't even really identified, but was always a problem up on the space station. And that was that in the middle of this long, long space station, as long as the 50-yard line football field, in the middle section, that's where we tend to gather and eat. And that's where our kitchen table is. And every one of us would have like kind of bumps on our hips on this way when we would go from this end of the space station to the other one, and on this hip when we come to this way, because this table kind of stuck out in the way. And I mean, you could solve that problem by putting the table up, down, breakfast, lunch, dinner, right? But this table was in the same place for 10 years on the space station. Wow. When we got up there. And Paolo looked at it and he goes, well, why don't we just put it in a different position? When you think about what's a table for? The table's for eating. We want to be able to have our food be on it. Well, if we're on a space station, it doesn't, and there's no very little gravity, doesn't really matter whether you have it this way, your table.
Right, or vertically.
This way, you're still going to have to put duct tape on there or a bungee cord that you tuck your package under. Or we have little Velcro on our, there's Velcro squares on the table. There's Velcro tabs on our packages, right?
Right.
So we stick our stuff on there. So it doesn't matter what position. And Paolo figured out, well, if I put it like this
vertically
on the wall,
yeah,
it's out of the way. Nobody bumps their hip. But you know what? We're all kind of like eating dinner, sort of like looking at each other and not quite having a little place that we gather around and kind of sit around the table, which is really important for crew morale.
Right.
So that's not the answer. And then he figured out, what if I put it like this? And so something that had been a problem and you're not even recognized as one for 10 years, because Paolo looks at things differently, we solved that problem.
So he put it at a diagonal in the where? Like on against the wall?
Against the wall.
Oh, yeah. So a diagonal against the wall, which made then a free space for you to float by, maybe to the right
exactly.
or to the left of it.
Exactly.
Oh, that's, you know, so that's cool. Funny. That is, see, I mean, 10 years people were bumping their hips. Like
just think a table, a desk. I mean, it has to be horizontal. It's the way we've always seen it. And it takes somebody who can kind of just do a reboot of their imagination. And that's what I think problem solving is.
So, of course, we are going to ask you, because I know our listeners want to know, what's it like to go to the bathroom when you're in the International Space Station? How is it different?
Well, I am going to say that it is awesome. I mean, I've done a lot of camping.
Okay.
I lived in Antarctica. I have gone on long camping trips with the National Outdoor Leadership School, and I have lived underwater, which in a habitat where you actually go and do that outside. And I will just tell you that there's a lot of company out there, and that is like the worst place, really.
Yes.
We're talking giant fish. Giant fish. Okay, that's another story. And so I've gone to the bathroom in a lot of places, and I will tell you that it's so easy in space. But it comes back to this problem solving, where, okay, we have stuff that we'd like it to make sure that it's kind of yucky, so we want it to go somewhere, and we want that to happen the right way every single time, right? So I'm a scientist and engineer, and in my family, we just think about this in very factual ways. We think about pee and poop, okay?
Yes.
Now,
yes.
For liquids, we've talked about liquids and how up in space we get to figure out how they, you know, how do we get them to go where we want them to go? Well, one way to do that is a vacuum. Now, do not try this at home.
Absolutely do not try this at home.
Jennifer, this means you.
No, I will not. I've heard
really,
this
gently,
story.
I mean it. I mean it. Not you.
I've heard this story before. Yes.
Well, so it's a vacuum, but you know, if you think about that, think about the let's think water drop, right? Blum, blum, blum. I mean, we actually have a little game that we play up in space where we sometimes release a big blob of water between us and we play soccer, you know, where I blow it.
And oh, wow.
Goes towards you and you blow it back and the loser is wearing that.
Wearing the water.
And so, you know, when we want that to go someplace, we don't need a big vacuum like your vacuum cleaner. No, we
right.
just need a gentle breeze and everything will go where it's supposed to go. Goes down into through a big hose, a funnel hose
right.
down in there. It goes through all these little valves, it goes through these little filters and things like that, and it comes out at our faucet and we drink it.
Ah.
Because our other problem we had to solve in parallel was we don't have a lot of water up there. So how can we recycle everything?
Yes.
It sounds kind of gross, but you know, the worst part of that might be that you probably drink recycled pee too.
Yes, I was going to say that. Kids and parents, you know, don't think about that, but everything goes through the water treatment plant, and either some of it ends up back into our rivers or lakes after it's been cleaned, water systems, or it comes back through. So, yeah, people don't like to think about that, but, I mean, that's what happens. I mean, I was thinking about that because water also, when you're going up into the, you know, you're going up in the rocket or on the shuttle, weighs a lot. Like, if you pick up 2 gallons of water, that is a lot of weight to transport with you. So you can't make sure that, you know, most of your cargo can't be water that you need, hopefully.
It's true. So we can bring water up in the supply.
Well, sure.
But we really try to minimize that, and we try to conserve it. And so even like when we're exercising and we're sweating, we collect that water out of the atmosphere.
Oh, wow.
And in fact, I had a problem one time where suddenly they weren't collecting as much water as they usually were. And there wasn't enough water in the space station system. It turns out that the crew that was up there thought they would solve their problem of having wet gym clothes, and they put them into a bag and sealed them up instead of letting them dry out overnight.
Oh.
And we didn't get the benefit. The space station didn't get the benefit of that evaporated water. So then we had to figure out a different way to solve their problem, which was to find a place that was kind of out of the way for these kind of gym clothes to be drying out.
Now, how often do you guys have to exercise? Every day?
We exercise, I would say at least 5 times a week, okay. Which is what we need to do. And maybe even more, maybe 6 or 7. We do about 30 minutes of cardio and about an hour of weightlifting. And then it takes about, you know, 15 minutes to get ready and 15 minutes to get cleaned up. So about 2 hours a week we spend per, 5 days a week. So it's about 10 hours a week per crew member to exercise, which is a lot of time, but completely necessary for staying in shape. And that's why getting out, and even if you don't think, feel like, you know, you love sports, getting out and being active, walking, doing something that gets your body moving. I mean, it's really, really important.
Hey, Kay, one of the things that you've said here in the show is how important it is to work with a team to be successful and to solve problems. We have a great team here at the Solve It for Kids podcast, and we have 2 team members who want to ask you some questions. First is my friend Emily from Southern California.
Is it scary being so far from home?
Emily, I wouldn't say that it's scary, partly because I in some ways, you know, I brought some things with me to remind me of my family, and it just made me feel closer. When I was in space, my son was 10. And he really loves tigers, and I had like his little stuffed tiger. We actually bought an extra one so that I had one in space and he had one on Earth. And so, you know, I took Hobbs to work with me, and I made little movies about Hobbs, and we call him, he likes Calvin and Hobbes. So we named this tiger Hobbs. And so there's things you can do to remind you that actually, you know, you may not be able to see somebody, but you really always have the feelings that you have together. Another thing that we would do is we actually could talk on the phone every single day, but that does get a little boring to talk to your mom even when she's
yes.
And so the way we solved that problem was we decided, well, what if we just like read a book together? And I would say, hey, do you want to hear about the boys? And we read a book called Peter and the Starcatchers, which we really loved. And so I would just say, hey, do you want to hear about the boys? And then I would read it, and we weren't really doing anything together, but we just kind of got to be together, which I really liked.
That's nice.
That is really nice. Hey, Katie, we have another question from another one of our team members. His name is Derek, and he's 7 years old.
Hi, Katie. My question for you is, have you ever seen an asteroid up close while you're up in space?
Derek, that is a great question. No one has asked me that. I have seen evidence of asteroids when I was up in space. And the place we see them, I mean, asteroids are, I mean, they're really, they can be really, really tiny, like grains of sand, or they can be big, giant things like we see in the movies, or they can be meteors that are falling down to Earth and burning up mostly before they get here. But we would actually see little tiny, tiny little dents in our windows from micrometeorites, we call them, instead of asteroids. And when spacewalkers are out, they actually see those little marks all over the space station. So we are in space with the asteroids. We don't really get to see them, but we do see evidence.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool.
That is really cool. Hey, you know what else is cool? We love to challenge our team members and our listeners. Katie, is there a way that you can challenge our listeners?
Okay, here's a challenge that I actually love to do myself, and that is, let's find the space station in the sky. Now, to do that, you need data. So the internet is the best place. This is where I live, and when am I going to see the space station and where? So the website is called Spot the Station. There's a map. Type in your location. Pick the spot closest to you that has a blue bubble on it, because that's going to show you where they've calculated already how to see the space station. And that's going to show you when and where to look. So when is really important, but so is where. It'll say starting, let's say, in the east and going to the north. So figure out what those directions are. Look up in the night sky about the right height. You know, anything above, say, 20, 30 degrees is going to look pretty high in the sky. And you'll see a bunch of stars, and you're looking for the star that's moving. And it might be a little bit hard to see at first. You think, is it that one? Is it that one? And suddenly, it'll be clear to you that there's a star that's moving, and that is not a star. It is the International Space Station with astronauts and cosmonauts aboard. And so you watch that sort of sailing across the sky, not zipping, but sailing across the sky. And you know, there's people there. And then as the last part of the challenge, I would love for you to draw the place that you would love to live in space. It might be a space station. It might be a planet. But think about where you would like to live in space. Good luck.
Thank you so much for being on Solve It with us today, Katie.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It was so nice to meet both of you.
Jennifer, that was amazing. Katie was awesome.
Out of this world, even, right?
She
knew I had to go there.
She was out of this world. And you know what I love? Derek and Emily, two listeners of the show, two great kids, they had a chance to ask Katie questions themselves. And Katie really enjoyed answering them, too.
Oh, yeah. Katie is amazing with kids. She has done such great talks. And we're thrilled that two of our own Solve It for Kids team members got to ask questions. If you want to ask questions of our guests, then just go to Solve It for Kids, ask your parents, and then you can click on our Patreon page and become a member, a team member. And we'd love to have you send us questions.
Awesome, awesome. I should ask my folks if I can become a team member.
Yes, you should.
Hey, I can't wait for the next episode. Jennifer, thanks so much for being part of this great Solve It for Kids podcast. We've been meeting so many great people.
Oh, yes. It's been fabulous. And just wait, we have so many more amazing guests on the way.
All right. Hey, everybody. We will see you next time on
Solve It for Kids.